Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and joining me, as ever, is Mr. Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, David.
Oh my God, what's happened to Marek?
I can't keep that up.
You remember in your youth when you could do crazy voices with your throat all the time, and now you can do them for about 20 seconds?
I remember having a burp gun where you used to burp to fire the... Well,
what?
Yeah, I call it a burp gun. It's basically you point your finger at something like you're shooting and you have to burp to shoot.
I could never burp on cue.
Well, you could do it about 10 times and then you stop feeling nauseous and make yourself sick.
I can't do it. I've never been able to. Justin Edwards is the master of burping on
cue. No one's done it more than... you can't do it more than 12 times without dying.
Is that right? Your bum explodes. From a build-up of air.
Your bum explodes from your head.
Oh, my God. Inwards and upwards.
Yeah.
Like a volcano.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Replace the lava with hot shit.
You better be good at counting if you're playing that game.
Yeah. Just go to 11 and stop. It's a bit like that thing of when you say, what's his name in front of the mirror? Candyman.
Piers Morgan.
Don't say Candyman 3 times in front of the mirror. Don't do 11 burps or you do volcanic... shit volcano for you.
Wow.
Like Scanners, but worse.
There we go, a film reference. And Candyman. This is all about films, really. It's not about horrible bum disasters.
I've been to a few film podcasts. And I don't know anyone, including us, who does film podcasts.
Prick.
All just referencing all these things. Oh, just stop referencing something and make your own point. You're not doing it. You're not doing an English essay now.
Yeah.
That's what used to annoy me about having to do essays. When I went to university, yes, I have been educated. And you realise you can't actually have any of your own opinions. You've got to just read some other twat's opinions and quote them.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
All your personal opinions are invalid unless someone's had them beforehand.
Correct. And you can back up your statements by going, well, an important man thought something similar.
This man is much more intelligent than me because he has got a book in print that is 5 times the price of a normal book because the print run is so minimal.
Yeah, if any book costs over £50, it means nobody wants to read it.
But you have to buy it in order to do this essay.
Yeah. My head of department at Edinburgh doing anthropology with 250 students would just read out the next chapter of his book every week and set us an essay based on it. There were 3 copies in the library. So everyone had to go buy his book. He was so fucking boring. It was all about the history of anthropologists and why they were all wrong except me.
Who's your favourite anthropologist?
I don't know. Can't name any anymore.
It all goes, all the memories go.
Well, it's useless knowledge.
All the memories go eventually.
Yeah, they do. They do. I used to be able to speak Spanish. Imagine that.
I used to make a cup of tea.
Yeah. Instead of just being covered in milk and porcelain.
Shattered porcelain. That man who forgets the matter.
How'd it go again? Well, it's funny you should be slagging off people just making endless references because I went to see T2 Trainspotting this week.
Why do they call it T2? Because it sounds like Terminator 2.
Well, that's people have criticised him for that. And Danny Boyle said he actually did contact James Cameron and say, do you mind? Because Terminator 2 Judgment Day isn't ever officially referred to as T2. It's just a fan name for it, I think. And I think it was partly just to be a bit interesting with the titling of something, plus the T2 sounds like a train, doesn't it?
May I just interject and say, that heavy breathing is not me, it's Buddy breathing onto my coat, but I'm worried that people would think that while you're talking it's me doing the in the background. His Buddy, who is, for new listeners, is a dog.
Yes, Buddy, the heavy breathing dog. Yes, so I went to see, 20 years on, since 1997, Renton and the Gang Are Back for more High Japes.
A bit of a risk, isn't it, this film?
What do you mean?
In terms of remaking a real cult...
classic 20 years later.
But totally...
of its time.
Yeah.
Well, first things first, the story is about Renton, 20 years on, and he has put aside his addiction to heroin and is now addicted to running. So he's just swapped one addiction for another.
Can't think of anything more boring than people talking about running.
Well, they don't for much of it, but this is, it's a very contemporary addiction, fitness, you know. And but he has a heart murmur, and that is the inciting incident for him. He collapses on a treadmill in the beginning. And to go back to Edinburgh and to revisit his old life, where Spud is off the heroin, but he's been on and off it ever since. Sick Boy is still there, or Simon, as he's now known, blackmailing people, using his girlfriend as a lure, and filming people doing naughty things. And Begbie is in prison, and has been for 20 years. And their story starts there, and it goes off on what it is. And, you know, it is utterly pleasant and fun to see Robert Carlyle playing Begbie again, to see Ewan Bremner, who is criminally underused in other things, to be playing Spud again. You know, to see Johnny Lee Miller and Ewan McGregor together, and, you know, they genuinely just look slightly chubbier, but exactly the same in the same regard. And the story is, by and large, fun hijinks with crime, leading to, you know, emotional betrayals and blah, blah, blah. So, it's all right. I don't know, and I've been mulling this over since I saw it, I still don't know why this film exists, except as a cash-in. I'd like to believe more of everyone involved. There is no... it felt like The Force Awakens.
Oh, really?
Rather than anything else. Because it was like, look, it's the Begbie. Oh, he's about to be angry suddenly, isn't he? Oh, brilliant. Oh, look, it's Renton and he's gone over the bonnet of a car again. Mm. Look, do you remember that bit where he went over the bonnet of a car? Oh, look, Spud's babbling to people in a room whilst they look slightly confused. Do you remember that in the original film? Not only did they do that, whenever they reference something, the style is still very sort of music video and artfully done. It's like, you know, it's the whole film feels almost like a montage. But they splice in footage from the original Trainspotting so that you remember what they're referencing as well. They reference Renton going over the bonnet of a car 4 times in this film. They don't just do they do it 4 times. They reference the dirty toilet 3 times. It's all it is a nostalgia trip for people who were young in the 90s and enjoyed watching Trainspotting, and it has nothing to say about being middle-aged in the 21st century.
Oh, really?
Absolutely nothing.
It
starts off well with, you know, as in he's now addicted to fitness and he's sort of therefore culturally grown apart from the others, but it's all so superficial in terms of what it actually says about anything, and it just turns into a indulgent revisiting of the past. And it tries to have its cake and eat it by saying it's aware that that's all they're doing, but it also doesn't have anything to add.
Do you think it's because these days it's, you know, the TV series, because of the started off with 24, didn't it? You get to see characters really progress over 12 episodes and several series, so you really get to know these characters. And with Trainspotting, they're all such brilliantly defined characters.
Well, I disagree.
In the first film,
I disagree. I think Spud is, and Begbie is, and
Sick Boy.
Sick Boy slightly. He's sort of a bit grumpy. He's Scotland's Vince Vaughn, but Renton actually is just pretty. That was his character. He was pretty and sort of the spirit of the age. And so Ewan McGregor, I think, is a brilliant actor, like, and underused as well. Like, in The Impossible, he shows he's got chops. Like, he can do this stuff. He can do the more difficult, nuanced, darker stuff. And Renton, I think, is laid bare as... In this, he's just the actor Ewan McGregor, because there's not... It doesn't really... There's nothing really to him.
Mm.
And Sick Boy is a cartoon. And it's... There's just... It's something's not working here, and they end up having to go down some odd paths with the plot just to make it work. And by the end, I was cringing.
Really?
Yeah, genuinely. With the plot they take Spud down, and where it's so... It's got that thing of... When you're constantly aware of the first film, rather than we're using the characters to make a new film that's relevant to now,
yeah.
It's simultaneously nostalgic and hugely self-congratulatory by going, hey, look at this thing that you all love that I made. Look at this thing. Do you remember that image that I created? Do you remember? It's just the constant... It depresses me that all... middle-aged people are given in this age to represent them is a nostalgic look backwards to better times.
I think that's a really good point. It's never...
There's nothing for you know, I don't count myself as middle-aged yet, but certainly I was the age that thought Trainspotting was fucking cool, and, you know, it was part of my... the culture part of.
How old are you going to be to classify yourself as middle-aged?
How old are you now?
40.
Your age, yeah.
My age. Middle age. When one of the greatest experiences is waking up and realising you've got enough milk in the fridge for a coffee. Yes.
Yes.
I've won today already.
Yeah. No, you know what I mean? Like, it felt alienated from Scotland, in that the people making this hadn't really been there in a long time, and so it didn't have a lot to say. There was sort of references towards gentrification and blah blah blah, but no, it all felt a bit like a cartoon rather than actually true. And of course the original Trainspotting was very heightened, but it was very youthful in how heightened it was, you know, with all of the music and the running and the crime, and it's just like, that is what youth sort of feels like, this rebellion and this self-discovery.
When it came out, it was a weird golden patch of Trainspotting, Seven, Usual Suspects.
Yeah, yeah.
Within about...
Great invention.
It seemed within about a month or so.
Yeah, incredibly iconic, stylish, inventive.
It was a tiny bit of cinema. It was great. Well, yeah. Now it's just...
Whereas this... It tries to embrace the fact it is a nostalgic look backwards and nothing more, whilst being a comment upon that being the current... what it's like to be middle-aged. But in that regard... I think I'm being over generous. I don't think it succeeds. Like, in the first one, the choose life, choose, you know, a car, choose luxury underwear, yeah, or whatever the
they
fuck.
They do
it.
That again in this.
He actually does it on camera to a woman, but modern things of choose Twitter, choose slut shaming, and it, and they almost justify why he'd say it, but it just. The fact they're referencing Trainspotting 1 is larger in the mix than what is actually happening to the characters here and
what's
now.
The soundtrack like? Because the Trainspotting soundtrack was amazing.
Yeah, it's good. It's a great soundtrack. And it's a very stylish film, you know. And it's, if you don't care about any of these things, it will be a nostalgic trip for you. In terms of that, it works. It absolutely works. But for me, it's another one of those films of our time, which are, what else have you got? What's new? What's the voice of the current generation? Like, you can't just keep rehashing old stuff. You know, it reminds me of what Alan Moore said, that it is a cultural catastrophe, that the culture of the generation of the 60s and 70s with superhero comics has been repackaged and fed back to the current youth as their stuff, when it has nothing to say about their stuff. You know, it was commentary upon gender relations and politics and international politics and everything of the time, and it's outdated now. It's had a sheen put on it, but it's meaningless to the current generation.
Mm.
And this just feels part of the problem, really. But if you want to revisit Trainspotting and see the characters 20 years on but still existing and being alive, if you want to go back to Irvin Welsh's world, then it's there for you to watch, you know. And there's fun bits.
How many Davids?
I've felt like I've been incredibly mean to it when I actually enjoyed it. It was one of those, we've talked about it before. At the time, you know, you sort of enjoy the ride. There's a couple of moments when you feel bored. You go, I am bored, to yourself in the middle. And then afterwards, it niggles at you and you want to pick it apart because there's something irksome about this. I think I'd give it 6. You know, it, some people will absolutely love it. No question. The critics all spunking over it, I'm a bit confused by. Mm. But I guess Danny Boyle is a sort of national treasure now as well, so he's always going to have a bit more sheen to his reviews.
Yes.
But no, I enjoyed being pissed off by it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I genuinely did. I was like, oh God. Right. No, it was lots of bits and pieces. Everyone in it's very good. The script has moments of goodness, but the story isn't particularly interesting. And I don't know why it exists.
Maybe.
I don't know the point of any of it.
Maybe life isn't as interesting, so that's a fair reflection of it,
David. Well, you know
what?
That's a good point. And I thought this as well. What is an exciting, vibrant story, but a truthful story, to tell about middle-aged Scottish people who used to be heroin addicts in their youth? What's the interesting story?
Managed to get a mortgage.
Without making it utterly fictitious, which this is, what on earth is the interesting story to tell with those people?
You managed to get a mortgage and you've had a really good bowel movement.
Well, there you go. It's not. It doesn't feel like the spiritual sequel to Trainspotting, does it?
That's what happens to us all.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Anyway.
Guess what? I think it's time for this. Some people are writing letters, we like reading them out. Here's an email from Louis Chilton. Subject, keep watching the films. Right, 100% correct. Dear David and Marek, I've been a fan of Film Fandango since episode 1.
Hero.
After the departed Danielle Ward gave it a plug on the radio.
She's not dead, she's just not doing the show. She's in Manchester right now.
I started listening about the same age I really began to get into film. I'm sorry, I'm reading it terribly as usual. And I found it an endless source of great tips. Oh, so we started listening to the film. Okay, I understand what he means now.
Okay.
E.g., World's Greatest Dad, Bad Timing, and the recently the shockingly brilliant Bone Tomahawk, as well as a sense of humour professional critics seem to lack. I don't always agree with your verdicts. I think Inside Llewellyn Davis is the best film in a decade, along with Inherent Vice. But Marek's fury, even when disagreeable, is perennially entertaining. I'll entertain your perineum, mate.
No, it's not. That's not what it means. It means you're also entertaining in winter.
Oh. I also have Film Fandango to thank for introducing me to several excellent comics. Danielle's shows have twice been fantastic, and what must be my favourite and early guest. What's wrong, buddy?
Buddy's growling at the arsehole dog next door, who's just gone onto the balcony to bark at the world.
I'm glad this subplot came back in, because it hasn't happened for a while. You keep on doing that because it adds some drama to the letter, buddy. So you're talking about John Roberts delivered what was for me his favourite comic set of all time.
Huh. That's good.
Anyway, apologies for long-winded, presumably unusable feedback, but I wanted to offer my sincerest thanks for the show, which has been a part of my life for years now. Oh, that's very kind of you. I'd also like to effusively recommend last year's The Assassin, a Taiwanese masterpiece.
Yes.
As well as the forthcoming Prevenge, which I was fortunate enough to see at the London Film Festival.
Oh, cool.
I think you'll give it a lot of Daves and Marek's. Just because this is to be the only writing I'll ever get around to do, I thought I'd include a casting challenge. Which 3 marquee actors will be cast for the inevitable big-budget Film Fandango biopic to play David Marek and Danielle? Lastly, I thought it would be worth pointing out that Marek's recent idea when discussing the excellent Victoria about a film shot on screen live has in fact been done very recently. Try googling Woody Harrelson's Lost in London. I'm sorry, we did it last week, so this email came through before last week's episode. So
yes, so apologies. It should have been in last week's episode, but here we are.
Keep watching the films, Louis. So if you want to hear about that, listen to last week's episode where David talks about...
Well, three things there. The Assassin has been on my want to watch list for a while because quite a few people have suggested it to me. Pre-Venge, there was a trailer for with Trainspotting 2, and it's Alice Lowe being suitably weird and violent, as is her wont. She was previously in Sightseers. It's also got Camden Kong's player Gemma Whelan in it, so I'll be going to see that. Do you want to play the casting game now?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, who would play you?
I would do Danielle first.
Okay, who are you thinking for Danielle?
Fairuza Balk.
Fairuza Balk. Yes, I can. She's not been in anything for a while.
I know, but when she was in sort of a...
I mean, the question was specifically marquee actors. Do you think Fairuza Balk's a marquee actor these days?
I'm trying to think of who else you ever could do with Danielle. Actually speaking,
sure.
Who would you cast? I mean, you
it's
probably
a bit
do.
Weird, mate.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Who's got a Danielle style quality?
Cloella Benjamin.
Yeah. Who Cloella Benjamin? No, I mean. No one really. She's got a slight Nottingham accent, which is very hard for actors to do, isn't it?
Indie actresses you need. Indie, sort of slightly angry indie actresses. That's why I went for Fairuza Balk.
I think that's a good shout, you know. I think that's a good shout. Or, you know, a Christina Ricci.
Yeah. But I think Christina Ricci's quite... I don't know if she's right. Let's do. Who do you want to do next? You.
All right. Who would you cast as me?
Nigel Havers.
Incredibly old Nigel Havers.
A young Nigel Havers.
No, he's again marquee actors, and you know now the film's being made tomorrow to ride this wave of. Film Fandango popularity that we're currently
on. I think Nigel Hayward should have been a big star after watching Chapter 5, but he never really translated into it. So I'm just giving him another chance. A young Nigel Hayward is another chance.
Okay.
I would do Nigel Hayward or...
Come on, if we were going A-lister on this film... We've got to pick A-listers for this, or it will never do well at the box office.
Okay, Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage. I was going to suggest him for you. Maybe he could play both of us. As both of us. You know, doing a adaptation style thing.
A bald Peter Dinklage.
And a Peter Dinklage with a dog.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'd be up for that. And then one of them is dating Fairuza Balk. That's a good film,
yeah.
Right?
So we've decided on that.
That's it, done.
Peter Dinklage would play both of us.
Yeah.
Like when they have an actor playing, like with Tom Hardy did with The Craze.
I was just saying, like adaptation where Nicolas Cage plays them both.
Bald Peter Dinklage and hair Peter Dinklage.
As he's usually known.
And
in Germany.
Book. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the poster of that.
Oh, do I have to do that? Oh, shit. Okay.
Well, there we go. I hope that answered your question.
And War Horse as Buddy.
Yes. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah.
This is from Jules Lawrence.
About musicals and stuff. Hi, Marek, David and Buddy. Regarding your musicals discussion, what about Cabaret? Great songs, a worthwhile story, and a far darker tone than one expects for a film of this sort. The scene with the angelic kid from the Hitler Youth singing Tomorrow Belongs to Me at the Beer Hall is absolutely chilling. David, thanks for bringing Slow West to my attention. Saw it on Netflix the other night and absolutely loved it. I assume, as you like this one, that you've seen Jim Jarmusch's Dead Man, one of my personal favourites and possessing of a quite similar dreamlike feel. Here's a discussion, topic/question for you. My 11-year-old son is keen on movies, but the fact is nothing older than about five years ever seemed to come onto kids' radar. I've set myself a job of introducing him to the history of cinema in a hopefully non-pretentious way. John Huston's films, Moby Dick and The Man Who Would Be King, have both proved winners. Both absolutely 10 Jules classics anyway. A few old Errol Flynn, etc. swashbucklers, the odd old RKO horror, etc. Any further suggestions for our continued journey? Keep watching them, guys. And a big thanks for making my drive to or from work on Fridays bearable. Cheers, Jules. P.S. For Buddy, best dogs in movies. I put forward Frank from Men in Black and the dog from The Artist. Well, thank you for that.
Films 11-year-olds would like.
I mean, I'd personally go for my personal favourites from that era, which were Time Bandits, Willow, and Baron von Munchausen. Very strong Terry Gilliam.
But history of cinema, I mean, but Hitchcock-wise, you could watch The Birds. I think an 11-year-old would really like that. I think that's his, one of a bit more action type.
Sure.
Hitchcock. What other films would be
good for an 11-year-old?
Flash Gordon.
Oh yeah.
It's not really the history of film though, is it? If you're trying to educate.
I don't know. I mean, 80s stuff. What about Big Trouble in Little China?
Yeah, these are all. These are films that 11-year-olds could watch. Ones are classical films that 11-year-old might enjoy and be educated on.
I think Errol Flynn's Robin Hood is a great shout from Jules.
Yeah.
What else is there from way back when that I've seen and enjoyed? Don't watch A Monster Calls.
Don't watch A Monster Calls, and maybe don't watch Don't Look Now.
Yeah.
Well, that sort of answered it, isn't it?
Sort of. Yeah.
I bet people love it, half-answered questions anyway.
They absolutely do.
Okay. Here's an email from Short Film Sunday. Your Breakfast Club chat and the bit about Short Circuit made me wonder about other beloved films that aren't really PC anymore and how we cope with watching them. Back in my video store working days, we were partial to Holiday Inn. From Thanksgiving to Christmas, we were subjected to Christmas films ad nauseum, so with that, at least there was the 4th of July and Easter. But there's a big President's Day production and the bits about GW and the Cherry Tree are fine. But Lincoln freeing the slaves includes some bits that are not okay. Minstrels in black faces, the word darkie. Really not okay, even though the context is celebration of emancipation. So I still enjoy the singing and dancing, but I was surprised to see it played in a local theatre this year. Just wondering if folk can think of others.
Well, I mean, there's a whole bin of films, isn't there, of white actors doing dark face that's just not really comfortable anymore.
Yeah,
you know, they were of their time, and we've moved on, thankfully, and so that should be fine. But for them just to be broadcast on telly normally is a bit weird. Like, I mean, there's endless examples, but we saw one with Ed Petrie, didn't we? Not If, the one after If.
Yeah,
remember what was it called? I'm trying to remember what it was called.
Just call it the one after this. If
one after If. Come on, we must remember. I'm looking through Malcolm McDowell's CV, and he's been in so many fucking films. It's taking me forever.
I was going to let you try and find it. I'll fill in.
Can you not remember what it was called?
I can't remember anything. I'll fill in with this nice tune.
Okay.
I like watching films.
The new jingle immediately.
No, don't. If I sing it, anything, someone's going to put it in a bloody jingle. Yeah. In the meantime, I'll read a very quick...
Oh, Lucky Man.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, Lucky Man, where Arthur Lowe plays the president of an African nation.
Really?
Surrounded by actual black actors who could play it better.
Really weird. Really weird.
Then there's slightly odd ones like Alec Guinness playing a sheikh in Lawrence of Arabia. Of course.
Yeah.
And with modern HD prints, you can see the makeup line around his chin and stuff, you know. Very odd.
Quick email. Tyler Rundy said, "Hi guys, the wife and I watch Hunt for the Wilder People based on your suggestion. We liked it quite a bit. It's pretty rare to get a good comedy that blends in heart and story these days. A solid 8 Tylers. Keep up the good work and keep watching the films." Okay, well, talking about recommendations. which you've been sending in recommendations. I watched a film on Netflix.
Yes.
I was stuck for films to watch, and I picked out one which I read someone on Facebook said it was good. So I thought, you know, I was watching with my girlfriend, let's try watching Sing Street. Immediately, I mean, what do you, if I said to you, Sing Street, what do you think?
I know nothing about this film, but I would assume it was...
All I knew from this was the title.
I would assume it was a sort of heartwarming musical about a working class street in Britain.
And what sort of feel to it?
It would be slightly dark, but with the edges cut off at times, but mostly just sort of uplifting. So a bit like Pride.
Yeah, I thought it would be, from the title, like Glee.
Yeah.
An English version of Glee and a real sort of musical for people who like musicals. So I had no interest in this film.
And yet you watched it.
Purely on the title.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I'd take a gamble on it because someone I trusted on Facebook who's recommended me good books before said it was really good. So I thought, just purely on that. And I said to... And my girlfriend was reluctant to watch it because of the title, Sing Street. No one I know has watched Sing Street purely because people go, it sounds like a terrible musical.
Yeah.
It's the worst titled film, I think.
Oh no, Spring is the worst titled film.
In terms of what it is, it's misleading.
Yeah.
Because no one...
Well, let's play this game. We'll get back on it. The film Spring, what do you think that's about?
Well, happy flowers coming out.
Right. If I told you it was a... incredibly dark romance about a immortal vampire, would you be surprised?
No. Has it got any trampolines in it?
No, none whatsoever.
Trampoline breaks.
It's a fucking terrible title. It's a great film.
It's weird you have to have some... The title said so much. I think Sing Street put so many people off this film. This is a musical. It is a coming-of-age film about this boy. He has to move schools in Ireland.
Right.
And he joins a different school and his parents are going through a tricky relationship. He lives in that big house with his brother and sister. His brother's a dropout who's really into music, who's trying to educate him on music. And he decides to form a band. This film is absolutely brilliant. I was so shocked when you start watching a film and you think, you start to think, oh, this is all right. When it does something, you think, could it be really good? You know, is it really this good? It is this good. Here's my controversial opinion. I've watched it a few days ago, so it's a time to sink in. I think it's a better... Possibly, it's not. It's up there with La La Land. I think it's absolutely incredible musical. The main character is this sort of kid, and it's set in the 80s.
Right.
So he is almost discovering music.
Have you just watched The Commitments?
Now it's similar to people liking it to Commitments.
Right.
I don't think it's that much like the Commitments at all. It's sort of very Irish, but it's just definitely that sort of... It feels Grange Hill sort of crossed with a musical without the sort of grubbiness of Grange Hill, but with more charm. The main cast member, I think he's sort of... I don't especially rate him, but it's that thing where you've got the lead is almost a bit charismaless, so it allows all the other characters to come through. For example, his love interest is played by Lucy Boynton, who looks very much like a Felicity Jones character.
Okay.
The guy who plays his brother, called Jack Raynor, is absolutely brilliant as this sort of...
I recognise him.
He's really... I think he's going to be a big star.
I was in Macbeth and Free Fire. I've seen him in publicity shots for Free Fire. Oh yeah, he's been in a lot of high-profile things recently.
He plays a sort of nicer version of the comic book guy in The Simpsons, sort of geeky guy. Aidan Gillen plays his dad, and I think Marie Kennedy, who was in Clintmans, plays his mum. It's just utterly charming, and the music is really, really good. All the songs are good, and it's never... it's a bit like La La Land. It's never a musical. The songs are just there, so they're like filming an 80s video for the band. You have a song, and they're all performances, and they're just part of the story. It's never breaking into song as a separate song. I was utterly charmed by this, and I think it should have been up there for... if you want to watch a feel-good film in January, we've already talked about Hunt for the Wilder People being good. La La Land's another feel-good film. This is a real gem on Netflix, and I think it's got a lot of popularity, cult popularity, but no one I know in their 30s and 40s is watching it, because you think it's just a film for children, and when it's not, it's a film for people who grew up in the 80s, and it's quite applicable to me because I'm sort of 40, so I understand all these references are things that I really understand. But it's just the small touches. Like all the kids are smoking in the smoking's really, really cool. All the wardrobe and the art direction is absolutely brilliant. So he goes through different phases, like when he likes The Cure, and they all dress like The Cure, and they all it's sort of a love letter to music of the 80s, which I think I love.
You can tell, and it's a hard thing to put your finger on, isn't it, when a film is in love with its subject matter.
Yeah.
Like, I would say something I didn't mention about Trainspotting 2, or sorry, 2-2 Trainspotting, is that Danny Boyle is still in love with Edinburgh. Like, it is a love song to Edinburgh. Not that it gets beneath the surface of Edinburgh. It's all, you know, the beautiful buildings and the scenery and the hills and all of that. But it's an odd thing, isn't it? And you can tell also when films just... they've just set it there and they know nothing about it and they don't really care and there's nothing. Yeah,
which wasn't this. I think the director's, it feels like it's a bit autobiographical, although it's not his story, but it's a story of someone growing up, changing schools, going to a different school.
Yeah.
It's got all the classic things of, you know, the school bully, love interest, but it all done brilliantly. And the supporting cast around the lead are all excellent. I found it a real nostalgia trip and I really enjoyed it. And a big recommendation, don't be put off. It's called Sing Street because that's the name of the school. It was on Sing Street, spelled S-Y-N-G, but they called it Sing Street. It's the worst title for the film. I think it's put so many people off.
It's odd that, isn't it? Marketing.
I was really reluctant to watch it because I thought, oh no, it's got a kid singing, which is not my thing. And
but this is the thing, the title is always part of the marketing rather than the authorship of the script or the film by the director, you know. And it can scupper things.
Yeah.
So much.
But I'd love to hear what you think of Sing Street. And the day after, I looked up to see who recommended it.
Yeah.
And it was recommended by Connor Lavelle back on the 4th of April. But oddly, the day after, he sent me an email recommending it again, saying he heard we're looking for recommendations.
Insistence from Connor has paid off.
And I should also read out his other recommendations. Here are his recommendations for great recent Irish films. So he's included a couple more. So Patrick's Day, which had its Irish TV premiere over Christmas and sent Twitter into overdrive, very powerful stuff. Sing Street, which was nominated for a Golden Globe last time around. Apparently Commode and Mayo raved about it. Who cares about them? His and Hers. I wouldn't compare it to Dear Zachary, but its own way, his documentary is just as affecting and very memorable. And What Richard Did. So there are his four recommendations. Watch one of them. And I can pass that on as a very high recommendation for a Netflix pick. For a happy, uplifting film. This is me being happy.
It is. This is what it feels like.
David!
You must watch Sing Street every day.
I don't know. It's all new.
Well, we're going to end the podcast quickly so that Marek can go out into the world.
I'll give it 9 Mareks.
9 Mareks. Well, thank you, everyone, for your recommendations. We will continue down your list, and please keep adding to it. You can go to filmfandango.com and suggest films from there, and also tell us anything about films you like, films you dislike, things you'd like us to talk about. Also, we do all of this for free, so if you would like to donate towards the podcast, which has been going for, I worked out,
too long,
over 7 years. What? We started in October 2011, So we're in our seventh year.
October 2011? No.
According to Wikipedia, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17.
It will be seventh in...
We're in our seventh year. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, as in terms of year itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the date, the numbers.
Sure. You get what I'm saying,
you're
right?
You're talking about the numbers.
When you say in your seventh year, that's what that means, right?
The numbers.
The numbers. We'll be back next week. Keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.